Welcome to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Thursday, August 20th. I'm your reader, Jim Hill. First up, let's have the weather for eastern Iowa. Today in the Cedar Rapids, Iowa City area, it'll be mostly sunny. Wind from the south at 5 to 15 miles per hour. We'll have a high of 84, a low of 57. Tomorrow, Friday, it'll be mostly sunny, a high of 86 and a low of 61. On Saturday, we should have some isolated thunderstorms, a high of 88, a low of 64. And then on Sunday, it will be mostly sunny, a high of 88 and a low of 64. The normal high for this date is 83. The normal low is 62. The record high was 100 in 1947. The record low was 38 in 1950. The sun will set tonight at 8 o'clock. It will rise tomorrow at 6:21. We have a little weather story today, this one from meteorologist Jan Reihard. Record heat in Death Valley. Many think of Death Valley as the hottest place on Earth, and it lived up to that earlier this week. On Sunday, temperatures in Death Valley soared to 130 degrees at Furnace Creek. If this is verified, this will be the hottest temperature in Death Valley in over 100 years, and tie for the third most reliably measured all-time global high temperature. While hotter temperatures have been recorded on occasion in Death Valley and the Middle East, the validity and reliability of those readings has been questioned. Accurate temperature readings require specific thermometers that are shielded from the sun, and record temperature readings of this sort must be verified by climate scientists. Well, I'm going to turn to the front page of the Gazette now for our first story. And the first story is, no surprise, a story about the big windstorm, the damage from that windstorm. Heading into day 10, Mount Vernon Road neighborhood residents come together. And the story is by Gage Miskimen of the Gazette. For Dennis Svoboda, 72, his home is the place he's lived for most of his life in Cedar Rapids. But this is the longest he's ever been without electricity. Quote, "Once in the winter, it went off for 3 days, but never this long," he said Wednesday, sitting on his front stoop. Svoboda inherited the home from his parents. The house sits on a side road, on a side street off Mount Vernon Road, in a neighborhood that has yet to have power back, heading into day 10 since the derecho storm ravaged Linn County on August 10th. Svoboda's property didn't sustain a lot of damage from the storm. He lost a tree here and there. His neighbor's tree fell on his fence and into his garden, but most of that is now cleaned up. And just as many others have said, he feels very lucky. And while every day now seems like one long day for the retired man who lives alone, his neighborhood, as many others have done, has come together to help each other. Quote, "I have a cell phone that ran out of juice a while ago. I've not had any telecommunications to speak of," said Svoboda, who doesn't have a generator. "But right now, the neighbors are charging it for me, so that'll be taken care of." Svoboda typically uses an electric CPAP machine to help him sleep, but he hasn't been able to use that since the electricity went out. But that's the second item on his list of things keeping him awake at night. Quote, "That hasn't affected my sleep as much as when it's awful hot," he said. "It's mostly the heat." Svoboda cleaned out his fridge last Friday and has been buying ice and food to store in his cooler. "Mostly, I have pop, beer, and lunch meat since Hy-Vee is open," he said. "I've been mostly getting junk food, popcorn, chips, anything you don't have to refrigerate." As for getting power back, he and his neighbors are uncertain when that will be. More than 21,000 Alliant Energy customers in Linn County still were without power heading into Wednesday night. In Cedar Rapids, 19,536 Alliant customers were without power Wednesday evening, as were 1,427 in Marion, according to Iowa Utilities Board data. Figures provided by the board Wednesday evening estimated full restoration for Cedar Rapids for this Friday. Alliance spokesman Mike Wagner confirmed that as the current estimate for customers that can accept energy, let me begin that again. Alliance spokesman Mike Wagner confirmed that as the current estimate for customers that can accept energy, those with extra property damage may have to wait longer. Collectively, energy crews have replaced 3,000 power poles across the state, and 1,200 miles of wire has been replaced. That's 10 months of work done in 10 days. Quote, "We will not rest until all our customers have power to them," Joel Schmidt, Alliant Vice President of Business Development, said during a Wednesday afternoon news conference. In an evening statement, Alliant said 90% of homes and businesses in Marion and Robbins had power. Brittany Hansen, who is from San Antonio, Texas, admitted she wasn't a big fan of Cedar Rapids when she moved to the city. But seeing how her community has pulled together since the storm has changed her opinion. She said, quote, "We've been thankful." Hansen, who also lives in the Mount Vernon Road neighborhood, still is without power. A tree in her yard split in half during the storm and fell on her house, gouging holes in the roof. She was in the basement with her son and dog at the time. She said, quote, "I've never experienced anything like that in my life. My son was shaking in my arms, and I thought the house was going to cave in on us." But she said she's trying to remain positive. On Wednesday, she was visited by chaplains from a Billy Graham rapid response team from North Carolina and Michigan, who prayed with her in her driveway. She said, quote, "I'm trying not to show my kids that emotional side. At lunchtime, we go around the table and list things we're grateful for." Hansen said, though they don't own a generator, neighbors offered to hook up her refrigerator. "Everyone is trying to be positive and friendly," she said. "We've all been doing things for neighbors. We had a big meal for a neighbor's birthday yesterday. And without electricity, her children have had less screen time," she said. "The kids have been reading more books, learning how to cook more. We've done more training with our corgi," Hansen said. Another resident of the Mount Vernon Road neighborhood, Dave Bunce, who served in the Navy during Vietnam, said he's been through blows before. Quote, "I went through a typhoon in a boat," he said. "I thought I'd seen everything, but I've never seen anything like this." Bunce, who is retired and whose home also is without power, said it's hard to know what's going on day to day. He said, quote, "We're all in the dark around here. I have a generator hooked up to my fridge at this time, but sometimes at night I hook it up to my TV to get the news." Bunce's house fared well after the storm, but had tree damage. That was taken care of from a tree service from Minnesota. Quote, "I thought 2015, when I got separated from the Navy, was a bad year. I thought 2018, when I got divorced, was a bad year," Bunce said. "But this tops it all, between this and the corona thing." But as with many in the neighborhood, he said all the neighbors have been working together for the past week to help each other. He said, quote, "Tonight we're going to have a neighborhood cookout in the only yard that's got shade left. I'll bring canned goods." Misty Newland has been staying with her sister, Angel Jeffrey. Newland is employed at Kraft Heinz and hasn't been able to work because that building is without power as well, she said. Quote, "I lost everything in the 08 flood, and it's hard," Newland said through tears. "My work has no power. What more can I do?" Newland, who rents her home, said her landlord didn't help with the tree damage or the weatherhead attachment being broken, and has been trying to get Newland to pay for it. Quote, "People can't afford the insurance and stuff to cover most things. We work hard for most things, and now look where we are," she said. "Why should we pay when we've torn the tree down, and we've paid for the electric. The sisters have one generator they are using for some lights and fans. Their groceries already are gone. Newland said, quote, "It's just heartbreaking. You've just got to keep smiling." Blocks away, Warren and Kim Lammers had a pirate flag flying on their downed tree in the front yard. Their grandson, Levi, who lives with them, had put it there. Quote, "My biggest concern is the kids," Kim Lammers said. "It's trauma." Levi got his Nerf guns and armored up and said he was going to protect the house. He's 8. He was scared. He's doing better. But this is a lot. Kids don't know how to process. 2 weeks before the storm, the Lammers' new large freezer chest had arrived. So with the help of their generator, they had neighbors bring food to keep cool. Quote, "We also had a little corn patch in the back that got flattened," Lammers pointed out. "But we got some corn, went around the neighborhood, and passed it out. We cooked it on our camp stove in a pot." And just next door, Josh Wortman and his father Paul, who drove in from Nebraska, were busy rebuilding his front porch that had collapsed during the storm. Quote, "I also lost shingles and had holes in the roof," Josh said. "Water came in. It was scary." Immediately after the storm, Josh worked on clearing branches with some neighbors. With some neighbors' help in patching his roof. Since then, he's been rebuilding his porch. Paul Wortman said, quote, "I've never seen anything like this. This is like a war zone." On his curb sat a piece of torn-off siding, and on it, Josh had spray-painted. Day 10. Now we have second story about storm damage. From the front page of today's Gazette, this story is "Down Trees Cover Oak Hill Grave Markers. Storied Cemetery Suffered Total Devastation." And this story is by Trish Mahaffey of the Gazette. Carl Thorson said his mouth almost dropped open when he saw all the majestic oaks, maples, and pines that were uprooted and ripped apart, now covering most of the headstones at the Oak Hill Cemetery. Quote, "It was total devastation, and I thought we'll never recover," Thorson, the cemetery superintendent, said of his initial reaction. He started going through the grounds earlier this week to begin documenting damage caused by the August 10th derecho. The 160-year-old cemetery has thousands of unique and ornate grave markers, headstones, and monuments throughout the grounds at 1705 Mount Vernon Road Southeast. Some of the smaller brush and debris from the downed trees was cleaned up by volunteers last weekend, making the small paths passable. But Thorson said more help is needed to cut the nearly 150 trees that were damaged or destroyed. Walking through the cemetery, Thorson said, "It's like tracing the history of Cedar Rapids through various founders or prominent members of the community and their families buried among the 11,000 to 12,000 plots. Many familiar names now associated with roads and parks stand out: Beaver, Daniels, Green, and Ellis. Others, Carmody, Collins, Douglas, Eli, and Sinclair, are associated with business and industry, education, and society." Thorson said it's his wife who follows the history and is involved with tracing the genealogy of the family plots. He said, quote, "I was anticipating worse damage to the headstones. We still have a lot to clean up before we can see all the damage. Some weren't harmed. One large obelisk for Carrie Lucas of the Babcock plot was damaged and missing the top part of the monument. Another one, the Hamilton monument, with a Celtic cross, was knocked over by a huge tree." Thorson said, quote, "All these are owned and maintained by the families. For any damage found, it could be difficult to find the families, depending on age of plot. We can repair some of the smaller stones, putting them back on the bases, but others are too big and expensive. One large oak fell and missed two headstones, but there could be other headstones underneath that can't be seen because of the branches and limbs, Thorson noted. One stone was knocked over and pieces were scattered around, but the tree needs to be moved to find all of it. In another area, there was an overturned portable potty amid a fallen tree. Thorson said the winds may have flung it from a construction site. Down from that area, near the Beaver family plot, a plastic gas station trash can and windshield washer container blew over from a come-and-go. On the other side of that area, a large obelisk monument for the McDougall family had been moved around, and each square piece of the monument was placed like a Jenga puzzle when blocks are pulled out to make the tower uneven. Thorson said the damage from his storm was the worst he has seen since working at the cemetery since 2005. He said he heard there were other storms over the last several decades that may have resulted in 40 to 50 trees being damaged, but the derecho was clearly the worst as far as he knows. Quote, once this is all cleared out, it will look a lot different until we repopulate the trees, Thorson said. We are hoping to have this cleaned up by next spring. We will come back and survive with the help of the community, with the community of the city. We just need time to recover. It will probably take 1 or 2 years to repopulate the trees. Any groups of 6 or more willing to volunteer to help the cemetery clear out the debris should email carl.oaknoll@gmail.com. Any volunteer will be required to sign a liability form. And now turn inside the paper to the Iowa Today page. And here we have yet another story about the storm. Mount Vernon stables cope with destruction from storm. And the story is by Alexandra Scories of the Gazette. Northern Lights stables in Mount Vernon saw massive destruction to its land and barn arena. For the Mount Vernon stables barn manager, Hannah Owens, the derecho that passed Iowa on August 10th was one of the most traumatic experiences of her life. Owens and barn boarder Christine Kennedy huddled in a sheltered feed room as the storm passed through the area. The two had managed to bring in half the horses they had, but they had to leave some horses outside as the gusting wind became dangerous. From the inside, the two could hear tin scraping off the roofs and horses making noises in fear. From the inside, they could see the roof creating waves. Inside, the horses were pretty frantic. Luckily, no one was hurt. We just figured horses would be dead, but they weren't, Owens recalled. Losing power proved to be difficult for the stables, said Danny Zwanziger, a Northern Lights employee. Though power has been restored, the stable employees had to adjust the feeding process because of limited access to electricity. It was just really devastating, Zwanziger said. I just got really choked up seeing the destruction. Zwanziger said she immediately drove to the stables and saw the Mount Vernon farms and barns that had been torn and was fearful she would return to nothing. The stable's owner, Deborah Johnson, hopes to have a restored facility by winter after hiring a demolition company, Zwanziger said. Owens had called Johnson to alert her to be prepared to return to nothing, as they had thought they lost everything. Quote, it was just emotional seeing it. This is what we do every day. A lot of blood, sweat, and tears went into this, Owens said. Now we'll turn to the inside page of the Gazette, where first we have this Gazette editorial. This is titled, An Unneeded Delay. During President Donald Trump's swift visit to Cedar Rapids on Tuesday, the president was praised often for his quick action in approving Iowa's request for a major federal disaster declaration. Trump didn't stay long and didn't survey damage, but he did act fast on the state's request submitted Sunday and approved on Monday. But there was a catch. Trump crowed that he had approved it in full. But it turns out he only approved a fraction of Iowa's $4 billion aid package. Aid for individuals and homeowners has yet to be approved, and it is desperately needed. And the truth is, Governor Kim Reynolds' administration could have sought federal help days sooner. The delay left Cedar Rapids area residents without power and necessities, wondering when help would arrive. Reynolds has argued the lag involved officials conducting a preliminary damage assessment, or PDA, that provides a picture to federal officials of the severity of a disaster and potential needs. It took several days to complete the PDA, so Reynolds did not request a declaration until Sunday. But a provision in the same federal rules requiring PDAs also allows that requirement to be waived. Quote, for those incidents of unusual severity and magnitude that do not require field damage assessments to determine the need for supplemental federal assistance under the Act. End quote. In those cases, the PDA can be completed later, but federal help can start rolling in sooner. State Auditor Rob Sand highlighted this provision this week, pointing to its use when an EF5 tornado hit Parkersburg in 2008. So record time could have also meant record time in help actually reaching affected Iowans. It's clear that the damage inflicted by last week's derecho was an incident of unusual severity. The day after the storm, the governor called it the worst in Iowa history. So the state could have sought a waiver immediately in consultation with regional federal emergency managers. The state didn't need to receive a request from local officials battling communication issues in the first hours after the storm. It's one of the many frustrating, maddening breakdowns in disaster response, leaving tens of thousands of Iowans to face the aftermath amid uncertainty about when help would come. It came from neighbors and local groups, but a larger governmental response lagged behind. It shouldn't have happened, and it can't happen again in the future. And again, that is the Gazette's editorial. And now we drop down to community letters, and we have just one letter today, this one from Matthew Downey of Centennial, Colorado. Thank you for your coverage, Cedar Rapids journalists. As someone with family and friends in Cedar Rapids, I'd like to extend my appreciation to the local journalists who have been working so hard to get the information out in the wake of last week's derecho. My parents called the afternoon of August 10th to tell me a severe storm was passing through and to assure me they were safe. The call itself indicated how dire things were, since Iowa has lots of thunderstorms, and I never get phoned about them. Having lived in so-called flyover states my entire life, I knew this unfortunately wasn't likely to be a focus for national news outlets. The Gazette, KCRG, and IPR were the sources I turned to, both immediately and in the aftermath, since my parents were left without power or decent cell phone service for a week, and you didn't disappoint. I certainly felt a sense of helplessness looking through images of my neighborhood, my high school, and the rest of the city torn apart. I still don't even fully understand the magnitude of what happened. But the dedication of Liz Lentz, Beth Malachy, and many others, to keeping us apprised of what is going on and how we can help, all while coping with major disruptions to your own lives and personally aiding those in the most need, has been remarkable and inspiring. Thank you. This is why local news matters. And again, that letter is from Matthew Downey of Centennial, Colorado. You are listening to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Thursday, August 20th on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. First, the short notices from Cedar Rapids. Abigail Lynn Walters, 61, of Cedar Rapids, formerly of Marion, died Tuesday, August 18th. Arrangements are with the Broche Chapel and the Ava Center of Cedar Rapids. From Independence, Wanda L. Kimler, 91, of Jacksonville, Illinois, formerly of Independence, died Sunday, August 16th. Arrangements are with the White Funeral Home of Independence. From Marion, Jean E. Turner, 89, died Monday, August 17th. Arrangements are with Iowa Cremation of Cedar Rapids. From Tipton, Timothy, also known as Jimmy James Young, 57, died Monday, August 17th. Arrangements are with the Fry Funeral Home of Tipton. From Wadena, Stephen J. Brehme, that's spelled B-R-E-H-M-E, 62, died Saturday, August 15th. Arrangements are with the Jameson Schmitz Funeral Home of Olwine. Now, dropping down the page, we have the longer notices. From Anamosa, Michael Burns, 57, died on Wednesday, August 19th, at his home following a brief illness. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday morning, August 22nd, at the Goetsch Funeral Home in Anamosa. Interment will be in the Holy Cross Cemetery. Father Nick March will officiate at the services. Masks must be worn to enter the funeral home and be properly placed over the nose and mouth. From Cedar Rapids, Ronald Bernice Hardy, 87, of Cedar Rapids, died on Sunday, August 16th, at Hiawatha Care Center. As per Ron's wishes, private services will be at Broche Chapel and the Ava Center, located at 2121 Bowling Street Southwest. Burial will be in Czech National Cemetery. From Cedar Rapids, Larry Hamilton, 83, of Cedar Rapids, passed away peacefully at his home on Friday, August 7th. A celebration of life will be held from 1 to 3 p.m. Saturday, August 22nd at Clancy's Keg in Cedar Rapids. Food will be provided. Iowa Cremation is in charge of arrangements. From Cedar Rapids, Irvin Lee McConnell passed away Monday, August 17th, quietly in his sleep at the Solon Care Center in Solon. He had contracted COVID-19 and was battling hard when it took his life. Memorial service will be at 6 p.m. Tuesday, August 25th, at Murdoch Linwood Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Cedar Rapids, with visitation to begin 1 hour prior. From Cedar Rapids, John Wayne Sidori, 92, of Cedar Rapids, died Monday, August 17th, at his home. Tehen Funeral Home and Cremation Service is serving the family. From Coralville, David J. Fodge, that's spelled F-O-D-G-E, 68, of Coralville, died on Sunday, August 16th, at his home after a 15-month battle with pancreatic cancer. David chose to be cremated. Burial will be in Keokuk National Cemetery. From Oxford, Bonnie Jo Lucina, 78, of Oxford, died Wednesday, August 19th, at the Birdhouse Hospice Home of Johnson County. there will be a time for family and friends to gather from 10 a.m. to noon Saturday at St. Mary's Catholic Church in Oxford, concluding with words shared by Bonnie's family, period. From Palo, Dean Darren Adams, 56, of Palo, died Saturday, August 1st, at Mercy Medical Center following complications from a blood clot. A celebration of life, open house, will be held on October 3rd, at 2 p.m. at Dean and Sue's home in Palo. T. Hen Funeral Home and Cremation Services are assisting the family. From Cleveland Heights, Ohio, Richard Kubu, that's spelled K-U-B-U, 76, of Cleveland Heights, Ohio, formerly of Cedar Rapids, died unexpectedly on Sunday, August 16th. Rich was born on September, which will be held from 1 to 3 p.m. Friday, August 21st, at Overton Funeral Home in Traer. Friends may call from 1 to 3 p.m. Friday at Overton Funeral Home in Traer. From Macon, Illinois, Peter Paul Roerich, that's spelled R-O-E-H-R-I-C-H, 80, of Macon, Illinois, formerly of Cedar Rapids, died Monday, August 17th. A celebration of life and burial of his ashes will be held next spring. He will be laid to rest at St. Mary's Cemetery in Mechanicsville, next to his grandson, Cameron. And finally, from Wilcox, Arizona, Paul Therauf, that's spelled T-H-U-E-R-A-U-F, passed away peacefully at home on Saturday, August 15th, 2 days before his 80th birthday, after a long illness. Funeral plans are for the rosary at 7 p.m. Friday, August 21st, at West Lawn Funeral Home, and the funeral mass at 10:30 a.m. Saturday, August 22nd, at St. Jude Thaddeus Catholic Church in Pierce, Sunsites, Arizona. And now, we will turn to the sports page, if I can find that. High school football will be played this fall, and we have this story about the Prairie football team. This is titled A Crucial Campaign. Prairie Junior Burkle knows the time is now to make an impression. And this story is by K.J. Pilcher of the Gazette. Cedar Rapids. Gabe Burkle realizes the importance of this football season. Junior campaigns are crucial to make a lasting impression on NCAA Division I suitors. He wants to cash in while his stock remains high, garnering three FCS scholarship offers and interest from Power 5 programs before he was an upperclassman. Quote, junior season is always a big one for recruiting. Cedar Rapids Prairie's 6'7", 235-pound tight end said, by your senior year, I think colleges have an idea who they're going for. I just want to have a great season. I want to play my butt off and have fun. A successful campaign would have big implications on his personal status and the Hawks' aspirations. Prairie's strong numbers and experience include 11 starters and 16 letter winners, back from a district runner-up team that went 6-4 a year ago. The Hawks face Cedar Rapids Kennedy in the home opener August 28th, kicking off a challenging early slate. Quote, our first three games are against a state semifinalist, a state playoff team, and a state quarterback quarterfinalist, Prairie coach Mark Bliss said about games with the Cougars, Dubuque Senior, and Cedar Falls. It will be interesting. Our first three games are against some pretty good teams. We do have a pretty good nucleus of kids from last year. Merkle is one of those key pieces. As a sophomore, he had 126 receiving yards on 6 receptions, tying for the team lead in touchdown catches. He plans to increase those stats this year, serving a more prominent role in the attack that also features All-State running back Nick Pearson, who rushed for 1,788 yards and 27 touchdowns. A person said, quote, Burkle said, quote, this season I might be more of a pass threat. I still see myself blocking. We run our single wing, and that is what we're known for. We're a great running team. We have a good strong line. We pass it a few times out of that. The numbers out of the single wing system aren't staggering, but his physical measurements are attractive to college coaches from the Big Ten, Big 12, and SEC. Iowa State was the first to extend a scholarship offer in April. Michigan State followed, and then University of Buffalo, Bliss said, Kansas State, Missouri, Tennessee, and Vanderbilt have expressed, let me read that sentence again so it comes out right. Bliss said, Kansas State, Missouri, Tennessee, and Vanderbilt have expressed interest. According to Bliss, Burkle also runs a 4.8 40-yard dash in addition to a large frame. Burkle also is noted for good footwork, which may be aided by playing basketball. Quote, there's no doubt he's worthy of being a DI-type kid just because of his size and range, said Bliss, who has coached 8 high school All-Americans, 24 DI athletes, and at least 1 NFL player. Quote, he has a ton of upside with his ability as an athlete. He can jump and run. He's got good hands. Quote, I know whoever he winds up going to play for will utilize his talent. He's a special kid. Burkle is anchored by his love for football, following in the footsteps of his father, Corey, who was a tight end and defensive end for the University of Northern Iowa. The two have engaged in some good-natured banter around the dinner table. Quote, he's telling me about what he did in college, Burkle said. I throw it back at him. It's pretty funny. Burkle has worked with former Iowa receiver Marvin McNutt at Hard Drive Elite in downtown Cedar Rapids. He has also picked up some things from his dad. Quote, he definitely taught me a lot of things, Burkle said. We go out and work on the field. He showed me a few tricks to help me. Bliss was pleased with the team's progress in the preseason, but the effects of last week's storms wiped out practice. They are back to work, trying to catch up and prepare for the first game. Quote, 2 weeks ago, we were on pace to where we wanted to be by week one, Bliss said. We had to take the whole week off because of the storm that came. Now we're behind the eight ball, and we have a lot of stuff we have to get done to get things in place. We have some work to do, and hopefully the kids are conducive to it and excited. And now we'll turn to the back page of the Gazette for the Dear Abby column. Long ago divorce, source of criticism. Dear Abby, I need to learn how to cope with caring for my mother, who is living with me. We get along most days. However, she is very much a negative Nancy on all topics, especially in my life. I've been divorced for more than 10 years, but she digs about my ex and his new wife as often as possible. I repeatedly have asked her to stop, but she flat out refuses because, quote, he left me in financial ruin. Yes, my ex is more financially stable today than when we were married, but I am neither desolate nor destitute. She makes me feel like no matter what I do for her, it's not enough. And before you suggest it, our only option is to live together. Let me read that sentence again. She makes me feel like no matter what I do for her, it's not enough. And before you suggest it, our only option is to live together. Please help salvage my emotional state. And that is signed, Challenged in Texas. Dear Challenged, for the sake of your sanity, you'll have to learn to change the way you react to Mommy Dearest, who can't let go of her grudge or resist stirring the pot. When she makes negative comments about your ex, don't take the bait. And when she complains that you don't do enough for her, start doing less, which may make you feel less taken for granted. Understand that you may never please her, and when the quarantine ends, encourage her to spend time at a senior center, volunteering to help others less fortunate, or some other activity that will get her out of your house. You should also spend less time with her when you need to. And that is the Dear Abby column. Now, I'm going to take a sip of coffee and look for another story. All right, let's see what we have here. It's called Feeding Their Neighbors, and it's storm-related. When Iowa storm crisis hit, local restaurants responded. And this story is by Allison Goins of the Gazette, Cedar Rapids. When winds rose and the power went out, it didn't take long for many local restaurants to respond by finding ways to help after the derecho swept through Iowa. Even as many of them were dealing with damaged buildings and homes themselves, dozens of restaurants and food trucks began serving free meals to their neighbors. More have been giving away food than it could fit in this article. Sonali Ravankar owns Persis Cedar Rapids, an Indian food restaurant that opened at 4862 First Avenue Northeast on July 30th. Having to throw out all her inventory wasn't exactly how she hoped her first month in business would go, Ravankar said, but she was happy she could help the community. She served free food on August 12th. Quote, "We realize still there are people out of power, so we thought it was better to start with a free food service, because we could cook and a lot of people could not," she said. "This is the time we could show how much we care. When we opened, we had a really good response from customers. This was a way to repay that support from the community," she said. Other restaurant owners echoed that sentiment. Marquee Pizza at 920 East 2nd Avenue in Coralville gave away more than 60 pizzas on August 12th. Quote, "We saw all the damage and wished we could help," owner Sam Hall said. "It felt like the most efficient way for us to just help out in whatever fashion we can. Everyone has been supporting us in the community with the COVID mess, and we're thankful to still be around. This was our way of saying thanks for everything, and we feel your pain." More recently, nonprofits like World Food Kitchen have been paying local restaurants and food trucks to serve daily meals. Teams of volunteers have ferried pizzas and sandwiches to hard-hit neighborhoods around town. Food trucks have shown up outside stricken apartment buildings twice a day. Other restaurants have received donations from individuals to fund their giveaways. Caribbean Kitchen started serving meals and then donations to buy groceries for the meals began pouring in. They've been parking in different areas of town each day. Willie Ray's Q Shack at 288 Blairs Ferry Road Northeast has been flooded with donations to give away hundreds of meals. Leah and Chris Price own Price Electric and wanted to donate money for food to serve free meals at El Banjo at 55 Gateway Place Southwest. Owner Javier Garcia agreed, and on August 14th, they opened the doors to give away tacos and rice. Price said when she tried to pay Garcia for the food costs at the end of the night, he refused her money. Quote, she said, quote, "Eventually, I'll find a way to repay him. other than my serving help, but I want to make sure he is recognized for being such a great community member and small business owner. Some places started serving free meals even before their power was back. Breakfast House manager Amanda Daoud said they prepared hundreds of sandwiches at the restaurant at 826th Street Southwest on August 12th, and again on August 15th, and she and her family grilled and gave away more food outside their house. For food trucks like One More Bite, getting service going was often easier than for brick-and-mortar restaurants because they didn't have to wait for power to be restored. Quote, "We have kind of an advantage with a mobile kitchen where we can serve a lot of people in a short amount of time in between chopping trees and cleaning stuff up," owner Jadon Cavill said. On Saturday, he set up next to Johnson Steam Academy in the Wellington Heights neighborhood and started handing out free tacos to anyone who wanted one. He had been parked on different streets throughout the week, doing what he could to help. Quote, "I thought it was necessary to really help out the community, especially in that area that a lot of times gets put on the back burner with stuff getting reestablished," he said. "I thought it would be a way to help out in the place I grew up." Paris Flournoy helped stop by for tacos and said a tree fell on his house during the storm, leaving a hole in the roof that he has covered with a tarp. He said, quote, "There are good people out here helping our community. This is what we need. It's hard for everybody, not just one person." A group of neighbors, including Andrea Rowland and Carmen Ort, took a break from clearing trees in their yard to grab tacos. Ort said, quote, "I was going to cook for everyone, and then I saw this truck." Rowland had roof and shed damage, but she repeated a mantra that seemed to be echoing around the city. It could be worse. "We have amazing neighbors. We've all banded together and been feeding each other," she said. "Our house is habitable. We have food and water and shelter, which are the main things we need. We're grateful." Steve Houston and Maston Rustum took a lunch break from clearing trees for Marion-based Rothschi Construction. They said they were working 12 to 15-hour days. "They see things like these meals being given away and feel thankful," they said, a feeling they see reflected back by the people they're helping. Houston said, quote, it's just gratefulness all around. I didn't expect this at all, but it's Iowa. And here's an interesting little piece. Weather Service gusts hit 140 miles per hour. Gusts from the August 10th derecho were even stronger than initially thought and reached 140 miles per hour in southwest Cedar Rapids, the National Weather Service said Wednesday in releasing revised estimates. The Weather Service said damage the storm caused in parts of Benton, Lynn, Jones, Cedar, and Clinton counties was consistent with straight-line winds gusting into the 100 to 130 mile per hour range. The Weather Service said the maximum winds reached the magnitude of an EF3 tornado. The measured wind gust measured, not estimated, was an unofficial 126 miles per hour at Atkins. With that, we'll bring this reading to a close. That does it for today's reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Thursday, August 20th. I'm your reader, Jim Hill. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website at iowaradioreading.org anytime. And thank you for listening.
I'm getting older. Do I need to worry about falling?
Yes, you do. Every year, 1 in 4 people 65 and older will experience a fall, and many result in serious injury. The majority of falls happen at home, so take a look around. Replace bulbs and add lighting to help you see obstacles. Remove things that can make you trip. Fix uneven steps and floors, and install handrails in bathrooms and on stairs. Consider balance or strength training exercises, which can help with agility. Get your eyes and hearing checked regularly. Changes in your hearing can affect your balance. To learn more, please talk to your doctor about steps you can take to help prevent a fall. You can also visit aarpfoundation.org or medicaremadeclear.com/falls. This message was brought to you by United Healthcare and AARP Foundation.
In the People's Pharmacy Health Headlines, flu season should be winding down, but the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention are warning about a second wave of influenza peaking in the southeastern U.S. Earlier this year, tests showed that the most common strain of flu virus was H1N1. Now, however, the H3N2 strain is becoming more common. That's the strain that caused such a terrible flu season last year. Both strains are covered in this year's flu vaccine, and experts report that the flu shot reduced the number of cases that needed medical attention by 47%. There is a new oral antiviral drug this year called Xofluza. One dose is all that's necessary to shorten the duration of influenza symptoms.
The first really new antidepressant recently won FDA approval for treatment-resistant depression. Esketamine nasal spray will be sold under the brand name Spravato. Physicians and patients have been eagerly awaiting the arrival of this new type of antidepressant. They may be shocked by the price. People starting on this medication will need twice-a-week dosing for the first month. The list price is roughly $600 to $900 per dose. That means the initial month could cost as much as $6,800. After that, people will require once-weekly or twice-monthly nasal spray administration. Those costs would range from $2,300 to $3,500. At the end of a year, Spravato could end up costing $45,000. Some insurance companies may balk at that expense.
For years, health experts have been telling people that exercise is critical for good health and that walking is great exercise. Dog ownership can contribute. People who walk their dogs regularly get more exercise than people without pets. A study published in JAMA Surgery highlighted a downside of this otherwise pleasant activity, however. Dog ownership has increased in the U.S. over the last decade, but so have broken bones among older people out walking their dogs. Such fractures doubled between 2004 and 2017, with the majority of broken bones in women. About half of the breaks were in arms, wrists, or fingers. The other fractures, unfortunately, were more concerning. About 17% of the broken bones were hips, a situation that can have serious negative consequences for a person's mobility or even survival. The scientists recommend obedience training for pets so that they don't tug at the leash suddenly and tip a person over. In addition, it makes sense to match the dog and its temperament to the strength of the owner.
Week after week, the FDA has announced recalls of contaminated blood pressure drugs called angiotensin receptor blockers, or ARBs. So many lots of Valsartan, Irbesartan, and Losartan have been removed from the market that there are serious shortages. To cope with this growing problem, the FDA has expedited the review of additional ARB products. This week, the agency announced that it had approved a new generic Valsartan from Alkem Laboratories in India. The FDA reports that its evaluation of Alkem's manufacturing process does not indicate a likelihood of contamination with nitrosamine carcinogens.
New technology that allows for non-invasive imaging of the retina may allow eye doctors to diagnose Alzheimer's disease. The retina is richly supplied with blood through a dense network of fine blood vessels. In Alzheimer's disease, however, this network thins and becomes more sparse. Possibly, this reflects what's happening elsewhere in the brain as well. the imaging is optical coherence tomography angiography. Researchers at the Duke Eye Center compared the retinas of 39 people with Alzheimer's disease to the retinas of 37 people with mild cognitive impairment and 133 people with healthy cognitive function. In addition to the loss of tiny blood vessels in the retina, a specific layer of the retina was thinner in people with Alzheimer's disease. These changes did not show up in people with mild cognitive impairment. This is the second time within the past few months we've heard about the possibility that optical coherence tomography angiography may offer an early diagnosis for Alzheimer's disease. And that's the health news from the People's Pharmacy this week.